Welcome to Ask the Chief Information Officer on Federal News Radio. Every week, Federal News Radio Executive Editor Jason Miller interviews CIOs of federal agencies about the latest directives, IT challenges, and successes. Now, your host, Jason Miller.
My guest today is Janice Glover-Jones, the Defense Intelligence Agency's Chief Information Officer. Janice, thank you so much for taking the time to join us today.
Well, thank you, Jason, for giving me the opportunity to be with you today.
Well, this is exciting in some ways because I've talked to your predecessor, Grant Schneider, several times on this show, and he was always a very good interview, lots to say. So you got a lot to live up to. So I'll put the pressure on you right from the beginning.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. Well, thank him, actually, because he was good. But this is exciting because you're a new CIO in some ways. In some ways, you've had a lot of experience in the role of the DIA and working inside their technology. So let's just start at the beginning. You recently moved from deputy CIO to acting CIO to permanent CIO. How big of a change was this for you? Was there a huge learning curve? And how did this change just your approach to being in the CIO's office?
When I was the deputy CIO, my primary focus was on the tactical day-to-day operations of the organization. And so for me, having an operational understanding made the transition pretty seamless. I learned a long time ago that anytime you're acting in a position, just to remove the acting and operate as if you are in the position. So during my tenure as the acting CIO, that is how I operated. So in practical terms, I began implementing my 100-day plan, and I focused on the morale and the cultural implications of the demands and the changes required as a resulting of implementing EyeSight. And because we have a lack of discretionary funding, it reduced my options. And so I saw a need to focus on the workforce to build a stronger performance culture, as well as ensure we continue to make greater informed, data-driven decisions, and then getting the team to focus on new priorities. Additionally, in transitioning to the CIO position, one of the biggest changes was establishing new relationships and building strategic alliances, which, while continuing to lead down the organization and up the organization with new leaders, as well as leading horizontally and externally with some of the key stakeholders and my peers across the IC.
In many ways, I can only imagine that your community got a lot bigger because not only you're dealing with the CIOs at NSA or NRO or whomever in the intelligence community, but now you're also probably working more closely with the CFO and the acquisition and the HR types. How big of a change was that? Were you already sitting in many of these meetings, but now you're running the meetings, so to speak?
I was sitting in those meetings, and then prior to me being the active CIO, so for years I served as the IT finance person. So I already had relationships with many of the CFOs, at least within a few of the agencies across the IC. So that wasn't a big change for me coming from that aspect because I had done that for a number of years.
And that's nice because if you walk into a room and you know them or you at least have met them several times, it's not a let me prove myself. It's okay, I already have that relationship. Where else did you have to establish kind of those relationships? Was it up the organization and down the organization in the program offices and the other executive suites?
Handling the money, I kind of touched all the customers internally to the agency, and some of them from an external standpoint. As you know, our agency transitioned directors, and so when the predecessor director left in, I think it was August, our deputy became the acting, and we got a new deputy in. So I had to establish a relationship with our new deputy director, Mr. Doug Wise, who came over from CIA. So that was a big one because I work almost on a daily basis with him on the EyeSight implementation as a service provider and as a service consumer. So that was a key position. Again, working with the services from the perspective of managing the IT portfolio across the national intelligence portfolio, I had worked with many of these individuals before in the past, but from a finance and resource perspective and now from an IT perspective.
All right. Well, you gave us a little bit of a heads up on maybe some of your priorities. EyeSight, I know, is a huge one. We'll definitely touch upon that. And I'm interested in the performance culture and workforce. But before we do that, let's talk about your background a little bit. You obviously said you worked in the finance side. Tell us more about that job, plus where else did you work inside or out of government?
So I started DIA in January of 1986, and my original plan when I came here was this was going to be income while I was already going to school and I was pursuing a nursing degree. I reached a point in my nursing degree that it was time to do clinicals, and I had already purchased a home, and so just for sheer economics, it didn't add up because the clinicals were only offered during the daytime, so which means I would have had to resign from DIA. and economically I couldn't afford it. So I found myself at a crossroad of deciding where do I go from there, and talked to a couple of counselors, and because I have pretty much a logical thinker, had taken a lot of hard sciences, I transitioned and switched into a computer science degree field and focused on software coding. And I went down that aspect, and I moved around in DIA throughout the years, and I eventually ended up in a budget position within the organization and supporting many of the technical fields. So I supported Magent as well as I have supported analysis and production, and I moved around into collection management for a little bit. And then I found myself ultimately ending up in supporting the financial resource management of the IT arena. And so I kind of landed there, and then I left DIA once, and I went to what was the Central Imagery Office at the time, which is now part of the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency. And from there, I came back to DIA and moved around internal to the organization a little bit. And I ended up doing a joint duty assignment over at NGA, where I served as the senior program manager for the Quad Initiative, which at that time was the Big Four, DIA, NGA, NRO, and NSA, leading the effort to do a joint desktop environment, which became the entry point for EyeSight.
Right. I remember the Quad and how it came about from the Quad to the Sync and then eventually to EyeSight. One other interesting aspect I remember seeing in your bio, you started at like a GS2 or a GS3 or something?
I actually started as a GS1.
A GS1, one of the few people who can actually say they started at the 1.
Yes.
I know Karen Evans, if you remember her, she was over at OMB for a number of years. She always would talk about how she started very similar at a low GS level and worked her way up to become, you know, CIO at Energy and then eventually the OMB eGov administrator. It's always incredible how it moves through. I mean, I imagine just looking back over your career, you never thought of yourself, you know, being the CIO of X.
I tell people this is a script I would have never wrote 20 years ago. I just didn't see it, no.
Right, and as you said, you were almost a nurse, so you might have a totally different path, which is excellent, because now you bring some of that. Let's talk about your work as the CIO now, management philosophy, technology philosophy. You mentioned that you were a coder. Talk a little bit about that aspect of your background, and how do you apply that operational side to the strategic side?
I define my leadership style as results-oriented, inclusive, and collaborative. I believe in clean leaders at all levels. When appropriate, I believe in leveraging diversity of thought and drawing on their experiences. At the end of the day, I will make an outcome-based decision. And my formula as a leader, once people understand me, is based on predictability because I'm pretty consistent with my approach. From a technology perspective, my approach is multidimensional. Given our hostile physical environment, and I have to constantly focus on priorities while balancing efficiency and effectiveness and innovation. So with that in mind, I classify myself as strategic. I can quickly see the big picture and either based upon the current state or imagining what could be and then focusing on anticipating the change and always looking for opportunities. And so from an operational standpoint, the software side of the house is actually one of the areas that I focused in on when I was getting my degree. And so being big on how that plays in now, ensuring that we get the analysts the right tools and the collectors the right tools for them to essentially meet the mission.
Do you still spend time on the operational side? How hard was that when you talked about the change moving from deputy to acting to permanent CIO? You just kind of change your viewpoint, but sometimes it's habits are hard to break. Do you still find yourself leaning in that operational side once in a while?
Actually, no, I don't, because I have a strong team around me. And when you have trust among your team and your leaders on your team, it's really not hard to do. For me, it wasn't.
That's refreshing in many ways, because a lot of times you hear from people who say, yeah, once in a while I still get caught up in the whatever, and then that does cause some challenges. I mean, they wouldn't say that, but I think, as you said, it's a trust factor. I know that if I ask my team to do something, they'll get it done. And I imagine that's something you built up over the years, being the deputy CIO, being in the program side, working with analysts and collectors and such. All that experience is really coming to the forefront as the CIO.
Yeah, I would agree. When you know your people, it makes your job a whole lot easier when you know what they're capable of doing and delivering. And then the other thing is, this portfolio is so large, so even if I wanted to, I would be failing in some other area.
No, I think that's fair. I think a lot of people lose sight of that. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we can jump right into EyeSight. I had a great conversation with Al Trasik, the intelligence community CIO, so you'll add another layer to that. My guest today is Janice Glover-Jones, the Defense Intelligence Agency's Chief Information Officer. I'm your host, Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm your host, Jason Miller, and my guest today is Janice Glover-Jones, the Defense Intelligence Agency's CIO. Now, Janice, before break, we talked a lot about you and your background and your ascendancy from a GS1 to a CIO, which is an excellent story. You mentioned a couple of your priorities in passing: workforce, performance culture, and then, of course, EyeSight. And any conversation, I think, within the intelligence community must start with EyeSight, the IT enterprise. So let's just start with DIA's role and progress as a service provider under EyeSight. Give us an update, please.
Well, as you know, DIA is co-lead with NGA for two major EyeSight services: the standard desktop implementation, which is known as DTE, and the enterprise management services for the IC. To date, we have more than 17,000 users at DIA and NGA that have already using the common desktop capabilities, which includes email and collaboration. And our goal is to complete the migrations of the entire DIA and NGA workforce by the end of 2015, and the remainder of the IC migrating in by 2018. From an EMT perspective, we're currently pursuing a competitive acquisition for EMT, which will be a single service centrally managed to include the EyeSight service desk, near real-time health and analytics, and status and situational awareness across the EyeSight capabilities and their applications. DIA is also co-leading the Mission User Group, which is the MUG, with CIA. This was convened by the Principal Deputy Director of National Intelligence to identify significant IC missions that would benefit from EyeSight capabilities as well as drive mission adoption. So the interagencies, they focus on the mission needs as well as identify and prioritize specific use cases that are being developed to execute and to demonstrate the utility of EyeSight capabilities and to guide their evolution as we continue to implement the EyeSight architecture.
Now, I know talking with Al Trasik just recently on my show, one thing about this is it's getting a lot of pickup. And we talked about the MUG, so I want to go back to that in a second. But before we do that, talk a little bit more about the enterprise service management services. I realize there's a competitive acquisition, so you can't talk too much into it. It's twofold. It seems like a help desk, but also a cyber analytics help, or am I reading too much into the cyber piece?
Yeah, you're reading into the cyber piece, and I can talk about that a little later. But this one it's going to be a service desk as well as look across the enterprise of all of the EyeSight capabilities to give us current situational awareness and the health and analytics of all of the EyeSight services that are offered, and the security aspect will be one of those many views that we get.
So, for instance, again, I'm not sure how much you're able to go into it because of the competitive acquisition, and of course, it's a sensitive subject. But would you be able to give me an example of a situational awareness? So, if someone is looking at X, other people will know that X is being looked at, or is that again? I know I'm simplifying it.
Yeah, if you take a traditional service desk in mind, if you think about it, if there is an issue, if there is an outage, you begin automatically troubleshooting. Where is it at? Is it coming at the network layer? Is it coming at the infrastructure layer? Or is it over on the applications layer? This is what EMT is going to be looking at. How is the health of the whole EyeSight architecture and its enterprise? I can't say much more than that.
No, that's actually much more clear because it's network, infrastructure, application layer. And because when you think of health, a lot of times people think cyber. And as you said, that's one piece of it, but it's not the entire piece. Is there any timeline around that in terms of either a contract award or getting this in place? Are you thinking later this year?
So later this year is our goal to have a contract award.
Okay. I know that when that gets awarded, hopefully we'll know about it and maybe we'll talk later. The other piece of this is the common desktop capabilities. You said 17,000 users are there. The rest of the workforce, I think, which would take you to about 50,000 users by the end of 2015, and then the remainder of the IC migrating by 2018. How's that been going? I think from what I've heard from others, it's working quite well, but give me your perspective as both a service provider and a user.
With any change, it's a cultural change. There are new tools and capabilities in the desktop. The migrations are going well. What we find out is it's really the users can play a strong role in kind of ensuring a positive user experience during the transition if they follow the instructions on simple things that they need to do. We haven't experienced a whole lot of significant technological issues, but, you know, there are little things that pop up. As far as performance of the desktop has been good. It's been going well. We've had a few hiccups, but nothing too big that we haven't been able to solve, I would say, you know, within 24 to 48 hours.
Were you able to describe maybe what one of those hiccups were?
It might just be latency on opening up an application. And, some of those things were just attributed to a configuration change that had to be made.
Okay, because a lot of times, you know, people don't realize that that may have happened whether you're on the new system or the old system just because of the application or the number of users. So it's always nice to hear kind of, hey, that's something, I'll use air quotes here, simple as latency. Mm-hmm. Where do you see this heading, you know, kind of as you look out to the future? More people, more capabilities as well?
Yeah, so DTE Phase 1, which is what DIA and NGA are operating under, were used with the two current service providers' contracts that they had in place. DTE Phase 2 is also going through a competitive acquisition and should be making an award here in the next 2 to 3 weeks, or certainly within the next 30 days. And that desktop environment will build the next evolution of the desktop that we'll focus on, as well as including our second-party integrees and foreign partners into the desktop arena.
All right. I know a lot going on. A lot of people are paying attention to that Phase 2 award. So, again, something to look out for. Let's talk a little bit about the MUG, the Mission Users Group. I found that this was a fascinating discussion. One of the things about it is it's really addressing the culture change issue, because you're talking to the people who will be using a lot of these services day in and day out. Talk about DIA's role. You said you're co-leading the MUG, the Mission Users Group. Talk a little bit about it so far and the impact it's having in creating that culture change.
Kathy Johnston, who is the head of our analysis and production organization here in the agency, is working with DIA to help lead this effort. And it's really about driving the mission and how it will use these new tools and capabilities, and looking at fundamentally changing the processes around analysis, around collection, around how we're moving from discovery of data to collecting the data, to analyzing the data, to conditioning the data, and to actually drawing and making an assessment on the data that you're looking at.
Do you get a sense that because you are bringing in these mission folks that EyeSight is getting a better take-up? I mean, from where you sit, you know, there's only so many users right now, but if you're talking to people outside of DIA or NGA, you may get, oh, I can't wait till we get access to that, or can I have access now? Do you start seeing that happening?
From an internal DIA perspective, we created what we call the Mission Users Transformation Task Force, the MTTF, to bring in our collectors, to bring in our analysts, to bring in our S&T brethren, to take a look at how should they better be leveraging EyeSight and to do just that, to help draw the user base in. And it also helps when you have, you know, the leadership at the top talking about it. One of the things that I think was pretty telling was at the last Mission Users Forum, the Honorable Stephanie O'Sullivan said, if from an analysis standpoint and from an analyst standpoint, if you all take EyeSight and you do your business the same way you was doing it before EyeSight, then you've missed the boat on it. So we formed that Mission Transformation Task Force team internal to our agency to just do that, to look at how can they start leveraging the EyeSight capabilities to yield better intelligence and to make better assessments moving forward.
Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we can talk more about EyeSight in terms of how you guys are using the services from the other parts of the intelligence community. My guest today is Janice Glover-Jones, the Defense Intelligence Agency's Chief Information Officer. I'm your host, Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm your host, Jason Miller. My guest today is Janice Glover-Jones, the Defense Intelligence Agency's Chief Information Officer. Janice, before break, we were talking a lot about EyeSight and your role as a service provider for EyeSight, the big collaboration enterprise-wide IT initiative. Let's talk about the use of EyeSight services. We talked a little bit about the desktop. There's also the cloud services that CIA and NSA are providing. Talk a little bit about your use of those, plus some of the maybe even the engineering services that's happening. I know that when I talked to Al Tarasic just recently, he mentioned a new app marketplace that must be very exciting for you as well.
Internally and externally, EyeSight is driving intelligence integration with a focus on mission and the development of new capabilities. And I would say, you know, from where I said, I've never seen the continuing engagement with our mission partners like I'm experiencing today, who are really focused on ensuring that the environment is evolving as designed and implemented to add value to the collectors, to the analysts, and to the S&T mission areas that support defense intelligence all source for DIA. Specifically, from a cloud perspective, we are using both of the cloud environments right now. On the commercial cloud, we have to date about, I want to say, 6 applications and data sets already migrated into the Amazon Web Services cloud, where we work with our mission partners to actually help us prioritize what mission and data sets are going to be moving into the cloud environment, and then we do the technical evaluation of what it would take to make that happen. Over on the GovCloud side, we have a volume of data sets that we've already migrated into to the GovCloud, again, working with our mission partners on determining what's the priorities for moving those in there. And we have a schedule that we will be implementing of the other data sets throughout the rest of the fiscal year for 2015.
Let's talk a little bit about the applications and data sets that you moved in the commercial cloud. Talk a little bit about the decision-making process. You talked about working with the mission people, but also there's a security aspect. I know that it's a Amazon cloud run by Amazon, but it's really behind the secret firewall or on the classified network side of it. Talk a little bit about that process to decide which goes where.
One of the things that we do is, as you said, we work with the mission customers to understand their priorities, to look at the problem sets that they're trying to solve, and then we take it through our technical business case review, and we look at what it would take to do it. We also work with the cloud offerings to figure out which would be the best environment that it should migrate on. And so it has to be a collaborative process where we're working with NSA or we're working with CIA or we're bringing them both together to take a look at and say, hey, are we going down the right path? And so it's really collaborative. I have my chief technical officer, Mr. James Harris, working along with the head of my engineering department, Ms. Geraldine Brooks, who the two of them are in partnerships, and they look at this and work in tandem with the various different service providers.
What goes into the decision process of which cloud you use? Because in some ways, the Amazon cloud maybe is just as secure as the government cloud, but maybe not from your perspective.
Yeah, so the issue would be currently how the app has been engineered and what it would take to get it over there, obviously. So we're trying to balance productivity as well as the costs associated for the back end of what it would take to get the application in there. We look at that. We also look at the technical specs of each one of the clouds, and we look at fundamentally how does the analyst or the collector plan on using the data and what is it that they're looking to use. And so there are multiple variables that go into play when we're making a decision on which cloud environment we want to use.
One of the things about the cloud environment is the agility, the flexibility people talk about. Do you foresee moving more and more, as you mentioned, data sets, but also applications to one of the two clouds?
Yeah, going forward. And it becomes a priority discussion because at the end of the day, we also have to balance, like I said, you know, I'm always stuck between balancing efficiencies and productivity as well as what's affordable. And so looking at it from an affordability standpoint, I can't take every data set that we have today and say we're going to migrate it into the cloud. And so that's where the mission partners come in because they really have to get down to what are the priorities that's driving it, and then what are the tools that we need for the future, or what are the analytics that we need moving forward in the future.
Was it a big lift for you from a cyber concern issue, from a losing quote-unquote control of your server issue to move into the cloud, or did you have the confidence because it was run by NSA, it was run by CIA?
It's a big cultural shift for the workforce and for my organization. Not necessarily from the standpoint of once they understood the tools and the capabilities that the various cloud environments provide, that really hasn't been the big rub. The big rub is, you know, from a workforce standpoint, is if somebody else is doing that, what's my job in the future? So that has been a lot of the cultural dynamics that we have to work out and continue to work and moving forward and defining, if I had a person doing that, what's going to be their role moving forward in the future.
And I think that's something every CIO faces, because there's this push to get rid of the commodity IT, but so much of your workforce, no matter where you work, focuses on that commodity IT. And how do you move people from a certain set of skills to another set of skills? And I know we're going to talk about workforce in a second, but before we do that, one last question about iSight. There's some other capabilities coming online, engineering help, the app marketplace. Are you starting to look at some of the other capabilities yet?
Well, certainly we're looking at that. The Security Coordination Center, which provides the enhanced cyber monitoring and the cyber event coordination across the 17 IC agencies. And it's one of the iSight service providers. While we're not the service provider, DIA is the executive agent for the SEC. And so through this capability, we're able to look at the desktop, the clouds, and make them auditable and look at cyber events and aggregate them and correlate it and then do the analysis across the IC team, which includes the cyber and the CI personnel. Most of this work is done through a set of tools that is looking for patterns and significant events. And so once the tools have identified what the events of interest are, they are analyzed by the team, and then the output is then turned into the respective agencies for intervention. So that's a big piece of what we're using as well and working with the security coordination of that. And then we're actually using the app storefront.
And I know it's something that the CIA, in fact, just turned on recently, and then they're also looking at another piece where they're working through Amazon to give you as the customer access to certain software titles that would live in the Amazon cloud as well. Mm-hmm. So that's a whole change. We talked a lot about iSight. Let's move on to some of your new priorities. What else are you trying to get done over the next 6 or 9 months? I know iSight is priority number 1 and 2, but what else is on your agenda?
As well as implementing iSight, I'm also focused on, there's two big things. I'm focused on enhancing the security of the data beyond the application layer to provide greater accessibility to data. Today, our data is siloed, and the security architecture is insufficient to reach beyond the application layer. And if that remains in this state, it will hinder missions' ability to discover relevant and timely data. So our intent is to have the data layer available across the spectrum of tools with optimized data indices that allow for rapid analysis without searching for a particular data set. So that's one of the areas that we're looking at, as well as additionally by moving away from the security of the data and away from the system and the network, accreditation of capabilities become very rapid and focuses on the appropriate functionality of the application, the widget or the APIs and the scripts. So vice reviewing it from the security controls associated with confidentiality, integrity, or availability. The second piece is I'm also looking internally, you know, another priority of mine is to enhance the culture of the workforce and to focus on creating a culture that builds in trust, a culture that builds in employee appreciation, as well as a culture that builds in accountability and ownership. So big priority for me with the workforce and actually changing the culture. As you know, changing any culture is hard, and it takes time to get that done.
Talk a little bit more about what that means about the data layer security. Is it a roles and responsibility? We've heard a lot about back-end attribute exchange.
Yeah, it will be done through the attribution. It will be done through roles and security and focusing on a need to know and balancing it with some information sharing perspective as well.
And I know that, for instance, within DoD, you have the CAC card, the Common Access card, mm-hmm. similar to the HSPD-12 card in the civilian world. Does that play a role into it? I know that there's been some move to CIPRNet, the secret network.
Yeah, so that's one way that you can do it is with a hard token. We haven't decided on what the solution would be, but primarily focusing the data security model that allows personnel with the right attributes to gain access to the data that matches the data in their personnel attributes. And so we will be using, you know, the attribute-based control, ABAC, in conjunction with ABAC, merging in the role-based access controls as well for non-person entities, such as maybe location or network or system, and so creating that data access model.
Is there a RFP? Is there an acquisition strategy around this yet?
No, we are beginning to focus on that. So there's no RFP or no acquisition strategy yet.
All right, so maybe something to look for in the coming months or years. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, let's jump right into workforce. My guest today is Janice Glover-Jones, the Defense Intelligence Agency's Chief Information Officer. I'm your host, Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. My guest today is Janice Glover-Jones, the Defense Intelligence Agency's Chief Information Officer. I'm your host, Jason Miller. Now, Janice, before break, we're talking a lot about EyeSight. Then we talked a lot about your new priorities, cybersecurity and security at the data layer. It was always fascinating. The other piece you mentioned was the workforce. And I think part of that was creating a performance culture, but also understanding the workforce shift that's happening. Talk a little bit about the workforce as a priority, and what are you doing to kind of address it?
So, you know, change is always presents a cultural challenge. I believe that our workforce, we have one of the most resilient and dedicated workforce that consists of a mix of strong government, civilian government, militaries, as well as contractors. And so over the last 24 months, we've taken significant reductions to our contractor workforce. And these large-scale reductions have certainly, you know, had some impacts on it. And one of the biggest impacts is the loss of some intellectual capital, institutional knowledges, and some valuable industry relationships. At the same time, we are benefiting by being able to strategically place our military personnel in some of the key leadership roles, as well as increasing our mission-critical training and workforce development, renewed around focus on leadership, technical and non-technical. And I brought a big emphasis on focusing on the soft skills side, emotional intelligence, critical thinking, structured analytics, to help the workforce. And to this point, what I've done is I've doubled our training budget, and I've invested in maturing the talent across the training opportunities all the way across CIO, so regardless of what your grade level is. We're also leading a aggressive recruitment campaign, hiring entry-level employees with some critical technical skills that we're looking at, and then growing our bench so that we can continue to offset some of the changes and the challenges that are coming our way. Our agency has established a target that 5% of your workforce should be out on joint duty assignments so that they can get new skills, so that they can forge relationships within the community and then come back to you. And so CIO has met that goal. We have 5% of our workforce that is currently out serving on joint duty assignments. And I think all of that wrapped together will help enhance the experience and strengthen our office and our employees when they return for the future.
A lot of people tell you, how do you, quote unquote, lose 5% and still get your work done? So many people feel like they're understaffed. How are you making that balance work?
Sure, it is a balance, and we're looking at where we can bring the opportunities for other people within the community to come in and work with DIA as well. Sometimes it's a sacrifice that you have to make, and when you look at leadership and if you look at it from a larger perspective, you might have to give up something now, but it pays dividends in the future. And so I challenge all of my leaders to look at that. So if I get a package up here where they are denying a person, I really take a hard look at it and say, okay, I understand that this is critical. I said, but we're not helping the individual and we're not helping the agency in the longer term. So it's really about being hard edge and keeping the bigger picture in mind when you do that.
I think that's so important. People sometimes lose track of that bigger picture. And that's always, it's also part of the doubling the training budget. I know numbers are sometimes hard to come by, but how are you able to get to that double of a training budget? Usually training gets cut.
Exactly. And we are living the impact of training being cut over a number of years. And so it was more of, you know, I had a talk with my leadership team and I said, hey, we got to put our money where our mouth is. And so for me, not only did I have to double the training budget, but I also had to put the travel associated with it to complement it, because I run an enterprise. And so all the workforce is not here in the National Capital Region. They're across the globe. And so the ability to be able to have the money to travel to take advantage of the training. And so one of the things that I did to show the commitment to this is I brought in a joint duty assignment from CIA, this individual who had helped actually stand up CIA's IT university, has came over, has helped me develop that workforce training program, focusing on the soft skills piece and working with the SMEs to develop the technical expertise, and I have that individual in place who is also taking some of the training on the road as well. And so we're looking at it from a multifaceted standpoint.
The fact is that you're bringing someone to develop these programs to really focus on the soft skills. I think that's so important because a lot of times in IT, there's always that push and pull between hard skills and soft skills. You understand coding, you understand cyber, but you also understand how to present it in a way that non-IT people can get it. Is that the biggest challenge for you guys from a workforce perspective? Is that soft skills piece?
The soft skill is a challenge, exactly what you said, of being able to explain IT to a non-technical person. But it's also IT people, and you know, they just naturally tend to be wired where they're introverts. And as a leader, you have to be able to deal with all aspects of the workforce, and communication and collaboration is a big piece of that. And so I really push self-awareness and knowing how to handle situations as they come up. So that's a big part of that. If you're going to be a leader, if you're going to have a workforce that stays engaged, that stays motivated to continue to work, you have to be able to deal with all different aspects, and everybody learns differently. And so that's one of the big things that I've been pushing on. It's not just your technical expertise. I want you to be a technically astute, but I also want you to have the social skills to build teams, to build relationships, and to collaborate across your customer set.
One of the other things you mentioned was bringing in some people at the entry level with some critical technology skills. Are you able to talk a little bit about what those tech skills are, generally speaking, at the very least? And then also, are you having any trouble at all finding those people?
DIA has set up several recruiting events. I think the last recruiting event, I heard something like there was over 4,000 people that had applied for some of the positions, and we do them together. So this recruiting event focused on the CIO organization as well as our chief financial office organization. They had something like over 4,000 applicants, and I know from a CIO perspective, we maybe really had like 160 that they were going to set up for interviews. So it's not a thing that we don't have the applicants out there. The areas that we're focusing in on is obviously cyber engineering, security engineering, systems engineering, network engineering, all of the, if you can think about it, the STEMs piece. The other thing that I've been trying to build up is for CIO, I want to build a whole data analytics team that can look at the data that comes across the enterprise and to help us to begin to be more proactive and to do some trend analysis and the various different points that we're looking at. So that's one of the areas that we're looking and recruiting in.
Now, I know that these are entry-level positions, quote-unquote, but you also have the change that we talked about earlier of moving people from, you know, maintaining systems or maintaining databases or maintaining servers to doing something else. Are those part of the reason why you decided to also double your training budget to move them maybe into this data analytics world, for instance?
Absolutely. So one of the things that I've asked when I talked about the whole workforce shaping and the workforce development, one of the areas that I have them working on is actually looking at a skills assessment and looking at what are the skills that we have. Also working with some of my Gartner reps and some of the other technology areas is where is technology going and what are the skills that I need in the future. So absolutely, that plays right into why am I doubling down on the budget and focusing on that.
One of the things I hear time and again from CIOs is the need for these data scientists, the people who understand data analytics. I can only imagine that need is even stronger in your world because data plays such a huge role in everything you do, whether it's human intelligence or geospatial intelligence or signal intelligence. Are you finding enough people, or is even though you got 160 people who have applied, the number who have actual data skills is just too small?
Those recruitment skills are happening across the spectrum of DIA, so I'm focusing on CIO's aspect of building a data analytics team, but also the agency appointing a chief data officer. I think they've been in place maybe about 90 days so far, who's looking at all of that, but also working with each one of the functional areas to identify the skills that they need from a data scientist and a data analytics perspective. So it's going multiple across the agency in various different aspects.
Very interesting. I think a lot of people will be very excited to know that you guys were able to double your budget for training in a time when budgets are tight, in a time when a lot of people are cutting training budgets, or at least making them, you know, no travel. Everything's got to be done online. We are almost out of time. Before I let you go, I always like to ask the getaway question because I know a lot of vendors listen to my show, and you mentioned a couple of potential vendor-related initiatives. What should they know about working with your office? How do you like to interact with vendors?
One of the things that I've been doing is I've had meetings with them. Obviously, it's becoming a challenge, but I also look for my CTO to take some of those key initial meetings with the vendors. And there's two takeaways that I want vendors to walk away with. First, I want them, for the existing partners who are working with us, I want them to tell us whether or not we're using the current tool sets that we have efficiently and effectively, and to help us begin to solve problems. For me, I look at innovation from a not just a technology standpoint, but the innovation for me is, can we use our current tool sets differently to connect dots to problems that we haven't connected before and to give us a greater outcome? And so that's one of the things that I'm looking for vendors to also work with us and to help identify that. The second piece is, we are also focusing on the war at hand that we're fighting in the current fight, in the current battle. And we have to continue to do that. But I also want vendors to think about the potential, who are our potential adversaries in the future, and what does the future conflict look like? And then what are those tools and capabilities that I might need in the future to help meet those mission needs and to help the collectors identify what they should be collecting, what's the next target, what's the next asset? So I want them to also be thinking about the day, but I also want them to be thinking about the future as well. And the future for me is 3 to 5 years out.
All right, I think that's excellent advice, something that vendors can really get a sense of what they need to do to come meet with you. Unfortunately, though, we are out of time. My guest today has been Janice Glover-Jones, the Defense Intelligence Agency's Chief Information Officer. I'm your host, Jason Miller, and you've been listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Janice, thank you so much for taking the time to join us.
All righty. Thank you for the opportunity.
You've been listening to Ask the Chief Information Officer. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, Ask the CIO, Thursday mornings at 10:30, only on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.